This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
From the capital of Texas, you're listening to the Austin Anthem Podcast. I'm Landon Cottom, and with me is Tony Cardone. How's it going, Tony?
Not bad, Landon. Happy whatever day of the week this comes out on.
Hopefully a Wednesday, but we'll see. So we are actually doing this from various parts of the capital of Texas today. We're doing a remote record, which is kind of fun, and we'll see how it goes. But I think it should be good. On today's show, we're going to be joined by Tyson Wall, the Academy General Manager for Austin FC. I had a really really good conversation with him earlier today, so we'll play that here in a bit. But first, let's cover some Austin FC news. So I think the biggest news in Austin FC world is that we have a sporting director now. Austin FC announced the hiring of Claudio Reyna earlier this week or last week. And yeah, I mean, he's United States men's national team legend, but has also been a pretty successful general manager / sporting director, whatever title you want to call it, for NYCFC over the last 5 years. So what are your impressions of that, Tony?
Well, I think if you look at Claudio's history, you know, those of us who may not have been following U.S. soccer even until the, you know, last 10 or 15 years have probably still heard of him because his involvement, you know, at the club level, and then when he went to Europe, and then he came back, and even spent time, you know, directing some of the U.S. youth national teams. I think it would be really hard to find a better hire than this at this point. You know, you've got Josh Wolf, who is an up-and-coming star. You've got Tyson, who kind of knows the area, has played in the league. And then you couple that with Claudio and all the success he's had, not only as a player, but like you mentioned, as a technical director. I think it's pretty easy to get pretty excited about this team.
So one of the criticisms that people inside MLS or people in the know in MLS had about the Josh Wolf hiring is, he's clearly a talent. Someone was going to hire this guy as a coach, but he's inexperienced. And so I believe there was an article on MLSsoccer.com by Andrew Wiebe saying that the missing piece is going to be this GM hire. And if they can really nail that, then they're going to have a pretty solid foundation. And so I think Claudio's experience in the league, international, like recruiting international players, he has experience with an expansion team with NYCFC. I think he really does cover a lot of the things that Josh Wolf lacks, just in experience. And so I'm pretty excited about this team that we've built so far.
Yeah, I guess it's very interesting to be excited about a team that has signed no players yet, right? But I think you can see the potential with, again, the way he's built New York City FC. They may not have won the league, but they've always been top of the charts in terms of talent. And that's not necessarily difficult to do given the structure of the City Football Group, but to attract them to Yankee Stadium with the goal of being a bigger club, I think speaks to probably his ability to recruit players that are probably historically legends like David Villa and, you know, some of the younger next generation players that the City Football Group has really been building their club upon.
Yeah, and one of the something that I hadn't thought about, I was reading Chris Bills' article in The Statesman. He mentioned the collective bargaining agreement. It expires, I think it's the end of January. And so they'll be kind of reworking that. And there's been some speculation that there's not been a ton of movement or a lot of rumors about player movement in MLS right after the season like you would expect there to be. And a lot of the speculation is saying that it's because of this collective bargaining agreement, not knowing what types of deals are going to be allowed or going to be possible going forward. And so he got a quote from Ramos, I guess it was maybe from the conference call that like the press conference call they did, but Claudio Reyna, a quote from him saying, I think for us, then it's an advantage because we'll go into it fresh. And so we can essentially wait and see what that new collective bargaining agreement looks like and then start signing players. Cause that should all be finished. Like unless there's some big crazy strike and it gets dragged on for a long time, we won't sign our first player until after that new CBA is signed. So yeah, I had never really thought about that point, but it really works in our favor.
Yeah, I mean, the collective bargaining agreement is expired. You'll have, you know, a very small expansion draft, whether it be one or two teams if MLS decides to how that works out. You know, and then you've, like you said, you've got basically this whole new pool of players who are looking for contracts in the new CBA that they didn't have under the previous one. It's basically starting with a clean slate, but if you were going to start with a clean slate, I'd much rather start with this clean slate than the ones you're seeing in Miami and Nashville, where they're kind of doing this, like, do we go all in this year to do well? Or do we kind of build with a team that does okay, and then with the future being the overall objective? So I think it's very important to put a competitive team on the field to start. The various success in the last few years, you look at Cincinnati, some of those, the competitiveness has not been there. But I think it's important for Austin, particularly being in the West, being, you know, now we're what, 28 teams, you don't really have the ability to start slowly as a franchise.
Yeah. One other thing in doing research about Claudio Reyna that I found and was pretty excited about is that he seems to have a real passion for youth development. I'll talk a little bit about that in the interview with Tyson Wall that's coming up. But he just seems to really, really care about it and has a pretty big heart for that kind of thing. So it's encouraging to see that it's something he cares about. He's going to pay a lot of attention to it and also make sure that he gets resources into the academy. So
I think if you also look at, historically speaking, we've shifted the model since he was a youth player as well. You know, playing through the NCAA, playing at Virginia, which is a great soccer school, but to go from Virginia or, you know, to go from a D1 college in the United States directly to a German team, like that's not going to happen these days. So as someone who's been here for that whole evolution and has built large parts of it, you know, in the last few years, I think that unique perspective and his connections within the industry, I guess, for lack of a better term, it is going to be something that the club should seize on right off the bat.
So something else in Austin FC news is they announced recently that the EMLS Cup in 2020 is going to be hosted by Austin FC as part of South by Southwest. So I don't know a ton about EMLS. I've mentioned that in most of the most recent episodes, but this is just another sign that Austin is already being recognized as part of the MLS landscape. And then also recognizing Austin for the other things that it's known for and that other things that the city is good at, which is technology and things related to that. So that was another pretty exciting thing to know that we're already being included in some of these MLS-y type things.
Yeah, so for those of y'all who don't know, and I'm going to make up some of this as best as I can remember it, the EMLS Cup is basically the digital equivalent of kind of an MLS-run tournament. So not all the teams, but most of the teams do have someone who they will sign on as a full-time player that represents their club. And so what will happen is, in this case, they'll participate in two qualifier rounds. I believe one is at PAX West, probably in Seattle. One will, maybe in Boston is the other one. I'm not sure about that. But basically, they'll have those two rounds as the play-ins, and then the winners will come to South by Southwest to kind of fight for the EMLS Cup championship. So they've done this before. I've seen it South by Southwest previously with the NBA 2K series. They've had it downtown for that. But this is kind of trying to reach out to the next generation, because a lot of us became really big soccer fans through the FIFA franchise. And this is kind of that first step out there. This is not necessarily unique to MLS. You know, the Premier League has the E-Premier League. There's leagues all across the world that kind of do this. But to see it, you know, right off the bat, not only being participants in, but hosting it, kind of speaks to a really big step in terms of growing the entire organization from the soccer side to the fan support to the digital side.
Yeah, FIFA wasn't my introduction to soccer, but it definitely was part of my education about soccer, just as far as learning who different teams are and who all the players in a certain league are. And so just playing like career mode in the Italian league or something like that, and just learning the different teams and different players and stuff like that. So It's definitely a really smart way for them to expand the marketing and just expand the popularity of the league. So it should be an exciting time here at South by Southwest next year.
I was going to mention the EMLS Cup Challenge was very recent here a couple of weeks ago, I believe, where the club basically had their first kind of trial tournament, depending if you saw it on Twitch, on Discord, or any of those things. But they did crown a champion. So congratulations to Gustavo Cisneros, who did win the EMLS Challenge at Valhalla. And so for those of y'all that didn't make it downtown that night, Valhalla is kind of an e-gaming lounge. You know, they got consoles all around, a bar, and a kitchen in the back. And, you know, the club hosted everyone there at a, you know, I guess it was a knockout tournament, and then a couple of best of threes there to close that out. And Gustavo pretty much ran the table against everyone there. So congratulations to him.
Yeah. All right. So let's go ahead and go to that interview with Tyson Wall, and then we'll be back after the break with some Austin Anthem news. Today's guest was an All-American soccer player at Cal Berkeley, then played in MLS for 10 years. After retiring from playing in 2016, he started a career in youth coaching, which led him to his most recent position as youth development director for local club Austin Texans. In March of 2019, he was named Academy General Manager for Austin FC. Tyson Wall, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me. Looking forward to it.
All right. So being that Austin FC's first team won't start playing until 2021. Your academy this year was the first players to wear the Austin FC crest out on the field. What is that like? How did that feel?
Yeah, I mean, it's been, I think it's been special for the staff, special for the kids as well. I know, especially early on in the spring, there was a lot of excitement when we went through kind of our tryout and ID process. And, I know the kids are super proud to wear the colors, and we try to ingrain that in them each day that it's a privilege and they need to earn it. So I think there's a lot of excitement there.
So starting an academy from zero, I imagine it's a very exciting opportunity for someone like yourself, but it probably also brings challenges. What are some of the challenges that that you have faced or will continue to face in starting an academy from zero, essentially?
Yeah. I mean, I think some of the pros of starting out from scratch is that you're able to do exactly that. You're able to establish the culture and establish the way you want to play. And you're starting from scratch. So you can take your time to set the principles and make sure it's clear that the kids are working toward the same goal and have direction and are learning about the pathway and are fully ready to take on all the challenges. So you can really set the tone early on. So that's the biggest pro, is you're able to do that. Some of the challenges, I think, mostly revolve around just starting smaller and starting with a smaller staff. We have one team. So because of that, we don't have 20 coaches, right? Some academy staffs who have six teams plus some younger programming, I mean, they have massive staffs. So we're a little bit smaller right now. We're able to, it's Juno, myself, and Samuel, the goalkeeper coach. So between the three of us, we pay a lot of attention to our under 14 team and our center of excellence players. But so those players get a ton of attention. But having said that, we still wear some multiple hats, and we're not as largely staffed as some of the other academies at this moment. But we'll be growing in that. And as we add age groups, we obviously will add staff members.
Okay. Are there any MLS academies that you think are doing a really great job right now, or that you've kind of looked to for inspiration?
I think a lot of them are doing very well. There's been a huge increase in the amount of resources being put into academies. You see some academies that are, you know, developing their own housing, and they have their own schools, and that obviously allows you to program your practices at different times. So some of those clubs are putting a ton of resources into their academy, and that's great. The union are doing a good job. Obviously FC Dallas has a pretty good history of producing players. I think it's a combination of doing a great job with the youth and having good coaches, and then also having a talent pool, and then also having an organizational structure that wants to play young players. So to do it most ideally, you have to have kind of all of those pieces for it to work well. But there's different structures are finding a way to succeed. I did an academy visit to Seattle, and they do a lot of focus on the older age groups. And so I think that they're very efficient with their academy. They don't have 8 academy teams competing daily. They do a big focus on 15s, 17s, and 19s, and then they have a training program for their younger kids. And I think they're pretty efficient with their resources. And other academies do it differently, where they have full-time coaches all the way at, you know, U11 and up. I think Montreal has really a huge, massive staff. So there's different levels of investment as well.
Is the difference in having, I mean, starting out at younger ages, is the main difference being able to cast a wider net, as opposed to what you said about Seattle is focusing a lot of effort on a small group of players?
I mean, at the end of the day, to have success, you're going to have to cast a wide net. I think it's just how you do it. Do you have a U10 team, and through that team, are you confident that that one team will help you scout and recruit the top players? Or are you confident that your relationships and the maybe the geographical specifics will allow you to not have a U10 team, and then whatever city it is just has relationships where they feel like they're going to get the top players no matter what at age 15, and then go from there. But having a team consistently train at a young age is definitely valuable, because then, you know, you have a little bit more control over the quality of the training, get the players getting used to the staff, the players seeing the pathway and seeing what could happen in years to come. So there's also a lot of positives with starting with young age groups, and I think we're committed to that.
Okay. Yeah, that's really interesting. Can you talk a little bit about the long-term strategy for the academy, and then maybe how that fits into the plans of the Austin FC first team?
Yeah. I mean, obviously our academy wants to develop professional soccer players. So that would be our goal. We do want to have younger age groups. Right now we have our 14s, and we haven't announced which age groups we're going to go with officially in the future, but I would say we're committed to trying to improve the game here in Central Texas at a young age. So to do that, I think we're going to want to have some younger age groups and really have a big impact with those young players, and make sure they're learning how to play the right way, and learning how to be good people as well. Holistic development's really important for our club. And then as we age up, I mean, as our academy gets into years 3 and 4, and as the first team is here in 2021, you know, we'll have ages that are kind of in more so of the competitive and performance age groups, the 15s, 17s, and right in that window where things are definitely getting a little bit more serious. The kids are, they're past puberty. They're playing at a high level, and there's higher expectations. And I think that timing will work out well, where they'll have had a couple good years of development with our quality coaching and our quality programming. And then the first team coming along in 2021 will obviously increase the motivation for a young player to try to get to that point.
Okay. So as you mentioned, you just have the U14 team currently, and you haven't announced which levels you'll end up with in the long run. Do we have a plan as far as the development or growth of the academy within, say, the next year or so?
We do. We just haven't announced it yet.
Okay.
So we, we have the plan. We haven't made it a formal announcement, but next year we'll have three teams. So obviously the 14s become the 15s. I think we've announced that we'll have a 14s because we have our center of excellence training right now. We have the 07s. And then I think we're set to make a formal announcement pretty soon here, but we'll have the three teams. And from there, those age groups will grow like organically and continue to expand. So in our second year of being an academy, so that's for the 2021 season, because the youth seasons are offset from the MLS seasons.
Okay.
So, we start in the fall. So our next season will actually technically begin next fall. So for 2021, we'll have three teams, and then 21, 22, we'd have four teams and continue growing from there on out. I think it's pretty common to have to get to a point where you have 19s, 17s, 15s, and then below that, that's kind of up for kind of strategic discussions and how young we want to go.
Okay. Will there be any situation going forward where a group above or a group older than this current U14 team would be added into the academy mix, or will this current U14 team essentially be the oldest academy group, like until they age out of the academy essentially?
Yeah. So as the 06s enter U17, so like in a year and a half or two, it's a split age group. So no matter what we decide on our age groups, that group will then, is assuming the league structures stay the same, they'll go from U15 to U17. And when they make that jump, all the 2006 birth years are actually would be U16. So at that time, we could add 2005s.
Okay.
So in that way, we will have older players capable of making the team.
Okay, cool. So you guys are currently training out at the St. Stephen's Episcopal School. But just a couple of weeks ago, the club announced plans for a $45 million training center, which is going to be utilized by the first team as well as the academy teams, from what I understand. So what will the significance of this facility be for the academy teams? And what is the timeline looking like for when your academy will start actually training there?
It's hugely significant. It's awesome. I've been able to be kind of a part of some of the discussions about having some of the needs of the academy be expressed in the kind of the design of the setup there at St. David's. So it's going to be huge. I think players are going to want to train there. I think players from outside of Austin are going to want to be there. Coaches are going to want to be a part of it. So it's massive. And then from the academy perspective, just having a site of that quality is going to be huge. And then also having it connected to and around first team staff members and first team players, just going to be awesome, like inspiration in the long run for our youngest players to see the professionals, right? See them train, occasionally walk by them at some point, right? I mean, they're going to have these moments where they feel like they're close, but at the same time, it's going to be important for them to not think that they've made it yet, because,
right,
you know, 13-year-old is, in most cases, they're not a professional yet. and there's a long way to go. And so that's also the balance too, right? I mean, it's a beautiful facility, but the players need to understand that there's still a lot of steps to take, and it's a long process, and they have to earn it. So that's also going to be hugely important.
As a first team player, so you played in MLS for around 10 years. What would you have given to train in a facility like this during your time?
Yeah, it's incredible how much the league is just changing so much. And that's probably one of the big stories that I take away from my career is it was an honor to be a part of all the growth that has happened in MLS. I've trained at football stadiums, outside of football stadiums. One team I was training with trained at like a recreational center. Kansas City, we were at Sprint headquarters, like athletic facility. It was fine at the time. It was fine. But just looking back, things have definitely changed.
Yeah.
So it's really, really cool to see all that progress and teams throughout the MLS are investing in their own facilities. So I think it's the direction that we need to go, just to become more professional and raise the standard.
I'd be interested to ask Josh Wolf and Claudio Reyna that same question. I imagine Claudio got to practice at some really nice facilities over in Europe, but Josh spending most of his time in MLS, I imagine between the two.
Some of the memories I'm talking about are with Josh, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just as the facilities kind of increase in the quality, so does the standard of the player, and you're able to bring in higher quality players, and the players that are here, it forces them to raise their standard. So it's fantastic.
So speaking of Josh Wolf, what is your relationship like with him? I know you've worked with him at least once in the past. Have your paths crossed more than once, more than just at Columbus, or did you guys work together in other places as well?
So we played together. One of those training sites I'm talking about is where we played together. When I started my career, I was a rookie in Kansas City. He was still in Kansas City as a player.
Okay, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I was like a reserve defender, and he's like the star striker. So we'd actually, in like scrimmage moments, we'd actually play against each other a lot. And you know, he was a proven player, and I was someone trying to stay on a roster. So.
Right.
Every practice to me was like a World Cup, and he was actually playing in the real World Cup. So, we got along super well then, and he was a mentor, someone you look up to, and obviously his technical ability was a different level. But then, so I had him. That was back in 06 and 07, I believe. And then he was in Columbus as an assistant for 14, 15, and 16 when I was there as a player. So we have a strong relationship. We're talking quite frequently right now, trying to make sure all of our plans are aligned. And obviously he's committed to the academy. He's well aware of academy structures and youth development. So him and along with Claudio, they're well versed in that area. So I think they're going to be committed to helping Austin FC grow a really high quality academy program.
Can you give us any insight as to what you think Josh will be like as a head coach?
I know him as an assistant. I think he'll do a great job. Of course, I think some of his strengths are his attacking awareness, right? Like, not as a player he was quick and fast, but I think he has a very good understanding about how to coach attackers and how attackers need to create space and movements they can do to find open space on the field and how they coordinate with each other. So I expect him to be very, very good at teaching our attacking players how to create goal scoring opportunities. And then just interpersonally, I think he's great with people. He's very witty and kind of quick witted and sharp. So he's a quick thinker. So I think the guys will enjoy kind of his sense of humor and how quick he is. And he's also very intelligent. I know obviously this past year he's been spending a ton of time scouting and analyzing. So I'm sure those are areas where he's really improved how to scout, how to analyze, how to present a game plan to the team. So I think he's going to do a great job.
Yeah, in just video and things I've heard and read about him, he seems to, like you said about the interpersonal relationships, he seems to carry a really strong rapport with the players that he works with. And I can imagine that being a player himself and not a terribly long time ago, that he probably does a really good job of relating to players. Is that true?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I think so. And it's such an important part of coaching, right? I mean, they're the X's and O's, but then at the end of the day, you have to get the most out of the players you have, and you have to know how to motivate, how to push buttons. And, I think he's great with those aspects as well.
So we mentioned Claudio Reyna. So last week Austin FC announced the hiring of Claudio as our new sporting director. So I've been trying to do a little bit of research. Of course, I know who he is as a player, but I've been trying to read and watch some videos and listen to some stuff about what kind of sporting director he'll actually be. And he seems to have a lot of interest and passion for developing youth talent. So have you gotten a chance to really speak with him yet? And what are just your general thoughts on him being hired?
Yeah, really excited to have Claudio on board. Obviously, he's a, as a player, he is a legend, a player that I grew up watching, and obviously a very, very talented soccer player back in his day. But now he's more of an experienced sporting director and manager. I know after he finished his career, he was working with U.S. Soccer, and he actually helped develop one of the kind of the youth development curriculums. So he's also pretty well versed and confident in the area of youth programming and youth development, and understand what it takes for young kids to become successful soccer players. So he did that with U.S. Soccer, and then obviously he's been a part of NYCFC from the beginning, and I think that's critical. I mean, to add someone who's been through the expansion draft and been through forming a new team in a city that Austin didn't have an MLS team, but he's just going to have very valuable experiences to add. So really excited about him being on board, and he's my new boss. I actually just had a conversation with him. So it was great catching up with him and kind of seeing his vision for the club and the academy. And I can tell you, he's going to be very interested in the academy, and he has a lot of good experiences that are going to help benefit our program too.
Yeah, that's great to hear. So one of the little clips that I found was in an interview he did with the Extra Time podcast earlier this year. I think it was January of this year, but he was speaking about his philosophy on youth development during his time at NYCFC, and kind of mentioned that results shouldn't really matter that much. Here's a quote from that interview. So he said, "We play all of our players up. We don't care about results. We'll care about results in tournaments because that's where we want to learn how to compete. But if you look from our U12s to U19s, what we do with any kid when it's easy at his age, we move him up in training and then in games. We keep pushing the elite players. In MLS, we need to push players up and forget about losing games." So, Tyson, what are your thoughts about winning and losing at the academy level? And what are your thoughts on the importance of results at that age?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm in line with what he just said. I think it's important to challenge players, right? If there's an under 13 player who is not being challenged in his own age group, you need to find him a challenge, right? So that player is pushed. I think that it's important for players to compete. I think it's important to teach kids that they need to compete and do their best in everything they do, whether that's a juggling contest before practice or a 5-versus-5 tournament in practice. I think it's important to teach the importance of wanting to win and wanting to compete and wanting to do your best. But I don't think it should be at the sacrifice of how you play the game or the sacrifice of keeping a player in his own age group just so you can dominate a game. So I'm in line there. And I think that as the age groups change and as you get older players, I think that also starts to shift a little bit, where maybe at an under 17 and in a tournament, you are kind of coaching to win and to showcase your club and to showcase your team. Maybe you're focusing on the opponent a little more at that age. You're doing some scouting. Your coaches are kind of analyzing how to actually win the game. Whereas an under 13 coach it's everything about the individual player and how you can improve them, and making sure the focus is on them developing their skills.
All right. That's really interesting. So Tyson, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining me today, and good luck with everything going forward.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. We want to thank Tyson Wall one more time for taking the time to talk to me earlier today. So we've been reaching out to Austin Anthem members on Facebook, on Reddit, on Twitter to send in questions. And so earlier this week, we were asking for questions about the academy. Some of these questions were similar to ones that I had, and some of them were similar to other ones that other members had. So I ended up kind of combining these questions and into one another. But I still wanted to give a shout out to some of these people who entered some questions. So Rigo Rodriguez, Alex Rubio, Rod Mercado, and Ryan Riggins all posted some of those questions on Facebook. And then on Reddit, usernames BoothKid and Time Isn't Working both posted some really good questions. Especially Time Isn't Working especially posted some really, really great ones that I really thought were interesting on the Reddit page. So if you're looking to engage with more soccer fans, more Austin FC fans, make sure and check out the Austin Anthem Supporters Social on Facebook. And then there's an Austin FC Reddit page. And then we're also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, wherever else you're looking. And yeah, we're pretty active on all of those media. So check that out. Let's talk a little bit. Sorry, go ahead, Tony.
Okay, and if you're of the older, just give me my email type. You can just send the question to podcast@austinanthem.org.
Yeah. So. Perfect. So we mentioned the training facility a little bit in my conversation with Tyson. So let's go into some of the details about that training facility. This was one of just kind of a sign at the commitment that Austin FC is putting into just a quality product in the end. So a training facility may not seem like a super important thing, but if you think about it, this is going to be the players and the coach's office. They're going to spend way more time at this place than they are at the stadium. So putting a lot of money into a really nice training facility is going to be a great recruiting tool. It's also going to be just to improve the quality of life of the players and improve the quality of the soccer on the pitch. So this was a really great sign from Austin FC ownership to show their dedication to actually putting out a quality product once 2021 comes.
Yeah. And I think if you look at the location of where it is too, that speaks volumes. It would have been a whole lot cheaper to put it out, you know, east of Manor, you know, out in the much cheaper land out there, but to kind of say, we're committed to Austin. We want to make it easy for our players, the professional players as well as the youth ones whose parents have to drive them to training every day to tell them, say, you know what, we're in the city, we'll build it, you know, big, you know, it's a $45 million complex, and to make it what appears to be a sustainable business model where it has, you know, shops and restaurants all nearby. You kind of look at all that together. And again, it's hard to imagine this being topped in the near future anywhere in MLS, because it's already right at the top of the list.
Yeah, so it's going to be, you mentioned the location, it's going to be located at the Parmer Pond development, which is right off Parmer Lane. It's going to be a $45 million facility, which if you look at the amounts that MLS clubs are spending on facilities like this, it's up there towards the top. It'll have four full-size fields, one of which is going to be a turf field with seating for around 1,000 people. And that will be where the Academy will host their home games. And so that's the reasoning for the stands at that pitch. And then there's going to be one half size pitch just for kind of training purposes. So one of these pitches was, they were saying in the press release that it's a super pitch. And I have no clue what that means. And I was doing some Googling and trying to figure out what a super pitch is. Tony, do you know what a super pitch is?
I know what the word super means, I know what the pitch means, but when you couple that together, I think we need everyone's help that's listening in on this, and maybe Weston, if Weston is listening, the groundskeeper for Austin FC, he might be able to, you know, drop us a line and we can clear this giant mystery up.
Yeah, maybe we'll include his name in the promotion of this show on Twitter, and he can give us some clarification on that. But if any of you know what a super pitch is, feel free to get in contact with us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, because I would honestly love to know. But needless to say, this is going to be a really impressive facility. And it's definitely going to be a huge asset to the club going forward. So let's move on to some Austin Anthem news. Tony, do you want to talk a little bit about the new merchandise that was just released?
Well, we have new merchandise that was just put on pre-sale. I was told to be very careful. It's on pre-sale because that makes it cooler. So some of the things involve t-shirts for the small ones, youth sizes. in particular on the violet t-shirts with the grackle, the classic one. I think there have been some requests slash demands that be made in the adult size, and trust me, we're looking into it. But right now in the youth, toddler, baby size, so take a look at those. And then as you get older, obviously you need different things such as coffee. So I hope everyone appreciates the segue work done there to get the coffee mug mentioned. You can get those as a single or a four pack. And I know those will probably be more appealing to those of us who have to wake up before 10 a.m. On the weekdays.
These mugs are really cool looking. So by the picture, it's not clear what the mugs are made of. I talked to Christine, who handles our merchandise, and she let me know that they are like a stoneware type thing, so like a ceramic type material. So not only do they look really cool, but they're also going to feel sturdy and feel like a quality mug as well. So I'm pretty excited about that one.
Yeah, plenty of room so that, you know, you don't get that coffee cup that's just a little bit too small, so you get the coffee spilling out. No problems with that. The stone mug. But if you do have something that wants to keep cool, we will have koozies. Those are also now available for pre-order. Those are good. Like, you can hand those out whenever you feel like you want to sport the grackle for a few bucks there. I think those are probably more active in the summer season, but you know, hey, you need that winter stout needs a good koozie as well.
Yes, definitely. We also have the final batch of the Kalaka shirts, which those are like the Day of the Dead themed ones that we did for a bit. So get your order in for those soon, because I think once we run this last order, those aren't happening again. So that'll be another piece of Austin Anthem history if you want to get your hands on that. And they also just look super cool. Then we've got black or violet lanyards. Those look really nice as well. And then this is a nice transition into the holiday party, but there's also a pint glass up on the shop right now. So last year, if any of you guys went to our holiday party at Haymaker, and I think that was it the MLS final party as well? Did we kind of combine those last year?
Yeah, it was the combo extravaganza, because it still happened after Thanksgiving.
Right, yeah, the final was later last year. So essentially, you can go online, buy one of these pint glasses, which I'm not sure what the design is going to look like this year. Last year, it was Austin Anthem logo on one side and the Haymaker logo on the other side. They look really, really, really nice, and I still use mine all the time. But I guarantee it'll look equally cool this year. But you buy that pint glass for $10. You get the pint glass. You also get your first drink at Haymaker for free. So go ahead and buy those. You have to pick it up at the party. We're not going to be shipping those or anything. So you'll just need to show, how are we doing that? Show a receipt of purchase, or we're going to have a list of names. Do you know, Tony?
I think we'll do both. Keep that receipt handy. But in case, you know, your computer stops working, we'll probably have a list. And if we don't, Christine will probably murder me.
Yeah, try to have some form of proof of purchase on you so we can give you your glass and your ticket. But just like last year, we're going to do some really cool giveaways. It's also going to be a toy drive. So if you bring a toy, we'll give you a ticket to enter a raffle. Some of the stuff we gave away last year were a copy of FIFA 19, some soccer balls, season tickets to Syntex Lobos games, all kinds of stuff like that. And some kind of, I think we had some, maybe some Aztecs merch, so like vintage Austin soccer merch. So there was some really cool stuff that we gave away last season. So bring a toy, goes to a good cause, and you also get a chance to win something really cool. We're also going to have a merch table set up. So we'll be selling some of the gear that's not on pre-order that we actually already have inventory of. And then it's just going to be overall just a really good time. So come hang out with us at Haymaker on, what is the date of that, Tony?
Saturday, December 7th.
Haymaker. Saturday, December 7th at Haymaker. All right. So we'll see you there. So, Tony, I know we usually try to keep this show focused on Austin FC or Austin Soccer or Austin Anthem, but I couldn't resist to bring this up. What do you think about the new Chicago Fire logo?
Well, first of all, this is not usually just about soccer. We usually talk about politics at some point. So I feel like something in the same realm of politics, art and design in MLS are pretty intricate these days. And that new Fire logo came out. It had some opinions. I think would be a polite way to put it. I'd say most people didn't like it. I would say I am not a fan of it, but I could see it working. What's confusing to me is that this is the city of Chicago. It's well known for its city of Chicago flag with, you know, the 6-pointed red star. And they somehow managed to use it, I think, in the worst possible way by making it a weird fire inferno thing. I will say it's gotten to the point where people are saying, well, the Revs logo is better. And that's only good because it's retro cool. It was never actually cool, guys. So let's not.
That one like made the circle, like made the like full cycle and like was never cool and is now like ironically cool somehow. But you mentioned the city of Chicago flag, the Red Stars, the NWSL team has like embraced that and made that their branding, and their stuff is amazing. So I don't know. I could see maybe wanting to do something different than another team that already exists. I'm kind of on board with you. I don't hate it. Like, it's not my favorite logo, but I also don't hate it. I think maybe it's been a little bit overblown of people talking about how bad it is. I do think that there's an opportunity going forward that, depending on how the rest of the brand is rolled out, so the jerseys, different merchandise or accessories that go along with it, I think they could actually do some really cool stuff with that palette, with kind of those geometric shapes and those colors. They could end up doing something really cool on jerseys. And I think probably in 2 years, people won't really even be talking about it anymore. And especially if they release some really cool jerseys, I think people especially will just forget about all of this. But I understand that there's a history to that old logo, but also it's not ideal when people are confusing the soccer team for the actual fire department or a television show by the same name. So I think the old logo looks cool in a vacuum, but I also don't think it's ideal for it to look like an actual fire department logo. So I was completely okay with them changing it in some form or fashion, but maybe they could have done a little bit better job, but I also don't think they did the worst job possible.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't be surprised within the 2 years you say people forget about it. I wouldn't be surprised to see in 2 years a minor iteration on it to make it a little bit cleaner with the same general concepts. But like you said, the previous logo, a lot of people liked it, but it was very much just the fire department sign. And unfortunately, unlike, say, the Wiz or the Revs, like, it never had that, like, cool via retro sense. Because I think people look back at that Wiz logo and go, oh, that'd be a cool retro logo. But no one's saying that the move to Sporting Kansas City with their much more cleaner, much more modern look was bad. I think Chicago's in a similar spot in terms of, like, well, the new logo isn't bad. But I think it'll probably get a revision, be it like, oh, we've opened a new stadium, so time to get another new logo. Because, you know, they are moving to Soldier Field from Bridgeview, I think it is.
Right.
And so I don't think they plan on being at Soldier Field permanently. So it would make sense to say, hey, we've built a new stadium. We might tweak the logo a bit when we move in there. So I think there's a natural confluence to kind of continual improvement there.
Are there any other MLS? I think I can't remember who this was that I saw post this on Twitter the other day, but they are asking, has there ever been a good redesign in MLS? Are there any other ones that you can think of that you think are really good?
Well, I hate to give credit to one of our rivals, but I think the FC Dallas rebrand when they were the Burn, I think that was a needed change because no one really knew what that logo was before. And when they were the Burn,
a horse on fire.
Yeah. I mean, it's like they took SMU and said, hey, let's light the horse on fire. That's a great idea. but then I guess Lamar came around and was like, you know what? I'm going to buy this team. We're going to rebrand it. And I guess he actually drew the logo. If you've read Phil West's book, you know this, but he drew the logo kind of on a piece of paper and they went with that. And I think it's done wonders because now it seems like it's a professional franchise. Is it quite as, you know, as exciting as, say, the Portland Timbers are iconic as that? Probably not. Or the LAFC one, which is probably the top one in the league. Probably not as good as that. But it was definitely much better than what they had to start the league with.
Yeah, I went through and looked at all of the teams that had done rebrands. Not just, there's different iterations of a lot of these logos, but you look at Portland. Have they ever changed it, or has theirs evolved over the years?
I think every couple of years they tweak the hue or something, but they don't mess with the basic design, which is
right. So I imagine there's a lot of those, but if you look at just like the complete rebrands where they change the logo or change the name even, I think every one of them is positive at worst. So like with Dallas, I agree. Like I don't love the FC Dallas's logo or their branding, but compared to what it was before, it's definitely an upgrade. And there's quite a few that are that way. But yeah, I don't know how many of them I would call like really good, but they're definitely all steps up from what they had before. And so it got me thinking about Austin FCs and going into the future. And if like, maybe we don't know what the future holds. Maybe 10 years from now, we look at this logo and be like, oh, this looks so 2019 or whatever. I really like the fact that the subject matter of the logo is something that is literally eternal. Like as long as there is human life on this planet, there's going to be trees, and there has been trees since probably before human life. And so that one center element of it will probably never change. And I don't think should ever change at this point. And so even if we do a completely new logo in 15 or 20 years, that central element will never change probably.
Yeah, I think even stepping back from our bias fan point, I think the Butler brothers did such a great job there. It's an iconic logo that can be modified and tweaked without losing the central theme of the green tree, because you're not going to get rid of the green. I'd be surprised if you even touched the tree, but you can iterate on it, you know, maybe change a font here and there, maybe change the where the tree goes from a shield to a circle or something. But in terms of that tree logo, I would be surprised to ever see that leave, pending a $100 billion takeover by Real Madrid or something.
Right. One other thing we wanted to mention before we wrap up is the meet and greet with Claudio Reyna on Tuesday, December 3rd. That's going to be at 5:30 p.m. down at Tacoba on the east side. The last few meet and greets they've done have been really great. The one with Josh Wolf was really good. It was a really great turnout. And then some of the random ones they've done around town just with front office members, they've all been really informative. But also it's a cool celebration type atmosphere with other Austin Anthem members, other Austin FC fans. So come out to those, come out to that one on Tuesday, hang out with us, come find us and say hi. We'd love to meet more of you guys. So, but again, that's Tuesday, December 3rd at Tacoba at 5:30 p.m. We'll be back with another episode here in the next few weeks. But until then, enjoy your soccer. Take